What kind of Pokemon are you? How do you do the things you do? Share with me your secrets deep inside.
Welcome once again to Duel Roads in episode 24. And I'm sure I used this joke when we did Nerds on the Rocks 24, but this is the Jack Bauer Hour. 24 is an awesome show, gone before its time. Well, actually, I think it went at the proper time. But, 24 is always going to be synonymous with death. Joining me this week, we have Daniel, as usual.
Hello.
And joining us, and I hope I remember, is Adam from Gamers Cast Podcast.
Yep, that's correct.
Yes, okay. This week we'll it's been a rather slow week for news, even though we had PAX. But PAX, I guess, doesn't really have any big breaking news traditionally, especially since PAX East is kind of like PAX site.
Yeah, there's not much. It's just
when
event.
PAX comes to the UK, it'll be PAX light, and there'll be nothing there.
I'm kind of curious. I guess it depends, but how would PAX UK be different than like Eurogamer Expo?
Yes, yeah, the thing is, it wouldn't be very different. And Eurogamer, although it's getting better every year, it still lacks a little bit. It's not high profile at all.
Which is a kind of a shame. I mean, I would think that because it's a midsummer.
September time, and, yeah. And there's and nothing, it's not like it has competition either. There is nothing else.
Not only that, but it seems like it would be the perfect time for a company to kind of put their fall titles on display because that is, you know, it's a free marketing for you, basically.
Yeah.
You can even use like your E3 demo because most of the people there haven't seen
it. And, you know, the amount of times that I've played a game at Eurogamer and said to other people, you need to buy this game and it comes out, you know. So, yeah. Oh, well.
Hopefully they do something about that. But before we hop on the act of news, let's start with what we've been playing recently. And since Adam is our guest, he can start us off. What have you been playing recently?
Okay, the biggest answer I can give is Pokemon White. In the last week, I've devoted more than 1/8 of my week's time to the game. Just to put that in perspective, I'm just loving it so far. It's absolutely amazing. Other than that, I've been playing, I'm on spring break, finally got home, reunited with my Wii, so I've been playing some Smash Brothers, Mario Galaxy, Mario Kart. Just all the games on Wii that I've missed throughout the last couple of months.
Oh, okay. You missed, as in you missed. I yeah, missed. Say, these games are like years old, so if you missed them over spring break.
Yeah. Not as in, like, I didn't buy them when they came out and whatnot. It was like, I haven't played them in a couple of months and I miss playing them. And other than that, I got Alan Wake recently. I left my 360 back in my dorm room, but I'm loving the game so far. Absolutely incredible narrative. The game is just graphically and artistically just a beautiful game so far.
That is, it's such an interesting game because it seems like you speak to any two people and one person's going to absolutely love the game and another person just doesn't really like the mechanics and how it plays. And it seems to be like one of those games that's very decisive. It's, you don't have many middle ground people like, it's an okay, you know, it's either they really don't like it or they really love it.
Yeah, it's true, and I think, you know, I'm a person who really loves a good narrative in a game and a good story, and that really provides it, just kind of like Heavy Rain did, Uncharted 2 did. This game really provides a solid narrative. And then, I've also been playing Killzone 3. I haven't really gotten the chance to play it in the last week, but, you know, so far the game's very beautiful, but the campaign, some parts are a little hard, the story, kind of boring and kind of, like, what I hate about these military shooters, and I think, although I never got to play Bulletstorm and play the full game, it made a good point that the stories in these shooters are all about war and they take themselves too seriously and it's all the same crap being thrown at players all over and over again.
Yeah, I think it's a necessary evil because I don't think many people would take a non-serious shooter serious. And, I mean, that sounds like, you know, but, you know, like, it's the same reason you can kind of get away with platformers that are like story because you don't want some type of deep narrative in your platformer because the aesthetic really doesn't cater to that. It's kind of, I think, and I don't want to go into this rant, but I think it's kind of like video games kind of need to mature in their form of storytelling, where it's always like they try to mess the aesthetic with this type of story it wants to tell, where you can do something like Pixar, who usually, you know, they make movies that people assume are for kids, but they usually have some type of, you know, underlying meaning that adults get, where video games, for the most part, are always kind of surface level.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
So yeah, you know, you want a grim and you want a grim and gritty story. You just have to make it real serious and patriotic, and that, you know, that appeases the people because for the most part, shooters are a Western thing, which is America and Europe. So we kind of appeal to our mentality and nationality and stuff like that.
I have to admit, in regards to Killzone specifically, I play a lot of these, you know, more first person shooters, but of all of them that I've played, Killzone bored me the most. The 3 weeks I actually had a PS3, I got 4 levels into Killzone 2 and I just couldn't play anymore. It was just not interesting.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they fixed those problems with Killzone 3.
Well, no, well, they couldn't have done with a 4-hour campaign. It'd be over before you start to get into it.
Well, didn't you hear that single player is just a demo for multiplayer nowadays?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if anybody here watches the bonus round, but...
I do every once in a while.
Yes. I forgot which developer said that, but they were like, you know, well, single player is just like the demo for multiplayer nowadays, which is a sad way of thinking about it, but it does seem to be the way people are going, where they have these really short single player campaigns, and then they just hope that the multiplayer can carry it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, some things, like I gotta admit the Call of Duties, the last few have been just... The single player has been short, but it, like kind of a short but sweet feel. They fit so much into so little time, and you know you feel like it's a 10-hour game, but it's really a 5 or 6. So, I mean, those are okay, but I mean, I'd want more.
Okay. And Daniel, what have you been playing?
So I've attempted to finish up Dead Space 2, and I got to chapter 14, and you may have seen it on Twitter, and then the game just really started to piss me off.
What happens exactly?
So, I'm not going to go too deep with the plot, but it spawns an enemy you can't kill, and you need to, so the whole game is about cutting the enemy's limbs off, right? So you need to cut its limbs off, and it regenerates, so you have to kind of stasis it while it's regenerating. Then you need to hack doors and stuff while you're running away from it, and then it gets to... And so I used up all of my health packs because I thought I could kill this thing. So there's bad thing number one. And then I eventually figured out, oh, maybe I can't kill this thing, so I've just got to run. So I ran, and then the game forced me down tiny corridors with a lift that I have to wait. And if that wasn't bad enough, I was being chased by this thing I can't kill and other things, and it was spawning enemies in this tiny lift. And I just thought, you know what, this is not enjoyable anymore. I was really enjoying this game up until this point, and now it's just frustrating. So, I know that chapter 14 is the penultimate chapter, and I'm probably going to go back to it at some point, but right now I have no motivation to do so.
Yeah, don't you hate when that happens?
And I mean, it doesn't even feel like intense or anything, because there have been bits where it's thrown quite a few enemies at me, but it's felt intense. Whereas this just doesn't feel intense, it's just frustrating, because I know there's this thing behind me that I just can't kill. And I also picked up Singularity, because it was cheap. And the single player is alright, actually, it's better than I expected it to be. I'm not going to even bother attempting the multiplayer, because I know that there's nobody going to be on it. The story's pretty interesting, about how you go back in time, and it changes the present, and you've got to sort it all out after when you do so. So it's a pretty interesting thing, and the whole mechanics of time is used quite well in puzzles. So, for example, like there'll be a door that's like slightly ajar, and you can't crouch under it. But what you do is you get this box that you can crumple by aging it. So you crumple it, and then you put it under the door, and then you unage it, so it pushes the door up, so you can crouch under it. It's pretty cool. Other than that, I haven't been playing anything, really.
Okay. And I guess that leaves me, and I've been pretty much playing Pokemon as well. Not as much as Adam. I just got my third badge. I'm on Route 4. I've been enjoying it, but I've really just been trying to pace myself because I know I have a tendency of kind of getting a Pokemon burnout before the end of the game just because... It's one of the few RPGs where I don't mind the fact that you have to grind just because you kind of end up seeing so many new enemies.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like each area you go to has like a different set of Pokemon and stuff like that. So the grind kind of becomes exciting because it's part, like, is this going to be something new that I can catch? Or, you know, if it's something I can KO quickly and gain XP. But after a while, it does, you know, like after 20, 30 hours, it does kind of wear on you that you're kind of doing the same thing. And, you know, you always have to switch out, you know, you're switching out teammates as you get new Pokemon you like. So it's like you have to level up these people, so you have to go through a grind again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm trying to pace myself so I don't get that type of Pokemon burnout. So, you know, I've been playing maybe an hour or two a day or something like that just to, you know, I'll do some grind, I'll make some progress in the story, maybe get a badge or two. I mean, I've got 3 badges over the course of like a week, so I guess 1 every 2 days or so. So yeah, I like the fact, I mean, it was like this in older Pokemon games, but it wasn't as often. I like the fact that you can go to certain areas and there's usually somebody who's just hanging around to heal your Pokemon. So you don't have to worry about like, running back to the Pokemon Center every time you want to grind.
It's funny because when I played it, I played it months ago and I had a Japanese copy, and I didn't like that.
Why?
Really?
So you know when you go into a gym, you get given a great water as well, a clear water or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Fresh water.
Yeah, I kind of thought, and you know in the first gym, you get given the Pokemon that you need to beat the gym with.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought that the game was holding my hand, in a sense.
I can see that, but I think it's just, I think, I mean, what Nintendo was intending, which honestly I don't, I mean, it's a great thing, but it's kind of like they wanted a refresh, you know, they wanted to bring new people in, and I think they figured that, you know, Pokemon, I don't think it has become too complex, but I think they just kind of wanted it to go back to basics where people, because I've heard stories like this before, where people, you know, like pick certain Pokemon at the start, because like I know people who pick like the Fire Pokemon and Diamond and Pearl because you don't find a proper fire Pokemon for like 3 or 4 dungeons.
Yeah. Mm. I just thought that, you know, because in every previous game, you know, the game has told me that Brock's a rock Pokemon gym leader, and I'm like, okay, I need to go out and get something that's rock. And even if I have to slave for hours to get something that can help me to get that Nidoran at the start of Pokemon Red so I can beat Brock, it felt like I worked towards it. And it just makes the reward of beating him even better. So instead of it saying, I mean, I know it only happens for the first gym, but instead of it going, oh, you need this Pokemon, here, have it. You know, it just kind of removes the work.
I get that, and I think, I mean, I can understand your point, because it is kind of, like, my team is pretty much because I had a water starter and then I got a fire Pokemon. I mean, pretty much you get grass and you're kind of set as far as like any of your battle with your rivals are set.
Yeah.
Goes, because you have a Pokemon that can take out anything they throw at you. So those become easier by default. And I kind of feel like I want to keep him on my team just because he balances out my starter. But, you know, at the same hand, he's not the most versatile Pokemon, especially being that they don't learn moves when they evolve. And that's the other thing, is like a lot of people just kind of give you random stuff. Like, I mean, that's always been a Pokemon staple, but like they'll give you specific stuff. Like if you go to somebody, they'll give you the stone you need to evolve, yeah, the monkey, and they'll give you the right one because they ask you specifically which one you have, and stuff like that. And the fact that like TMs are reusable now, so it's not like, you know what, I'll save this for one Pokemon. It's kind of like, oh, I'll use it. If this move doesn't work, I'll teach him something else.
Another thing that I was disappointed in, I'm just going to get this over quickly, is that they didn't, although, okay, the environment is less based around the HMs, but I would have just liked it if they kept it as it was, the environment was, and just made it so you could overwrite HMs.
Yeah, I've only had to use HMs like once so far, and that was cut. But I haven't got anything else yet, so that could be it as well.
Yeah, I kind of like that, and, you know, because like in the other Pokemon games, you'd like have, you know, some of your good Pokemon, then there'd always be that one that you put all the HMs on that's kind of...
Yeah, I was going to ask what type. I've actually never done that before.
I do that now.
I used to just put it on actual moves, because that would mean I kept the bird Pokemon, I'd kept the water Pokemon.
Well, yeah, but the thing was, there would be some HMs like Fly and Surf where you could actually use them. They were actually useful in battle, but the ones
and then there'd be like Flash.
There'd be Flash and there'd be Strength, and there would be Whirlpool that would go on one Pokemon because they're absolutely useless in battle.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to do this game. I got a Patarat or whatever you want to call it.
Patrat.
Patrat, And I was basically making him my HM slave, and I was also making him my bind victim, which is an awesome thing to do. It's kind of evil, but you know, like when my Pokemon use bind, yeah. I'll attack them twice, and then when I know he's going to unleash, I'll switch him in. He gets KO'd, and then I'll switch somebody back in.
Oh, God.
It was an evil strategy. I felt bad for him, but I'm like, this works because my Pokemon don't have to worry about surviving it.
And you wonder why Team Plasma want to separate Pokemon from you and say...
I hate to say it, but it's actually a reasonable point they're actually putting. I would actually join Team Plasma.
It's like a
hole in the story almost, because they make a point.
Make a good point, except they kind of do the same thing.
Yeah. If you play Pokemon Platinum, the story of Team Galaxy was a lot better as well, because the leader would actually go in depth and saying how he would just create his own world if he's not happy with the one that he's in, and instead he decided to take over the reverse world, and then he ends up failing at that. So yeah, they're really getting good at telling a story within Pokemon games, and that's the one thing I did like.
And I also have to say, I really dig the Team Plasma battle music.
I've always loved the team, like the evil team battle music.
It's good, but I really am a fan of Team Plasma's. And they get that night. I actually like the production values of this game. Like the whole, like they have the anime sprites now when you like use the phone,
yeah.
And like the battles and stuff like that. I mean, they did a lot of stuff with the technology. It's still kind of Pokemon at the core, but I like how they're kind of, you know, enhancing certain features that were antiquated. Like they're making it more visually appealing and stuff. I do hate the fact that they pretty much eliminated the bottom screen to just like wire stuff.
Yeah, because you're not going to use that most of the time, and then it just makes the bottom screen useless.
Yeah, like, I don't see why they couldn't have been like a tab on like your Poke Gear or something, you know.
And they've also, you know, in Diamond and Pearl, you press Y to access a bike or whatever. They've also made it so they brought that back, and they made it so it's now two buttons, because you can, if you wanted to, you can assign more than one thing to it. So you press Y and it brings up a menu which you have to navigate through to get to the item that you want. I didn't like that either.
Well, I mean, I kind of like that when it's, you know, like for certain, if it's quick access in like a town map or something. But I get to a point where like, you just press a button and your bike pops up.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, is like I think some of those stuff could, like, why not just make it so that it's at the bottom of the screen instead of having to go through this thing?
Especially if the seat gear is off.
Yeah, like right now, the two things assigned to Y are my POW pad and the drowsing things to find hidden items. And I'm just like, why not just have... Those are both things that could have just been on the bottom screen, and I could have navigated.
And even then, there's plenty of buttons that aren't used. As far as I'm aware, the shoulder buttons aren't used. Start and select aren't used, so you could make use of them.
And the touchscreen's not really used much. It's kind of just used to pick moves and battles, but what can you do? I mean, it sounds like we're down on it, but it's actually a pretty fantastic game.
I'm tempted to pick it up tomorrow, because I was avoiding it on purpose. But I'm tempted to go actually finally go and pick it up.
It's just that I feel Nintendo, there was a lot of stuff they could have taken from Heart Gold, Soul Silver, Diamond, Pearl, and Platinum, and kind of incorporated it into this game as well.
Yeah, it kind of feels like a separate team almost made Black and White versus Soul Silver and Heart Gold, I feel like it might have been the Diamond and Pearl team, but, you know, it's all Game Freak, but
I think they only have one team, you know?
Yeah,
I would think so too, but at the same time, you would have to imagine that they couldn't have been working at Black and White at the same time
Black and White uses the same engine as Diamond and Pearl.
Well, it does, but I meant, like, because Heart Gold and Soul Silver are less than a year old at this point, and Pokemon Black and White was announced even before those came out. So I would assume that they probably had one team who were enhancing it. Because I assume Heart Gold and Soul Silver are built on the Platinum and Diamond engine.
Yeah, they are. But
I assume they're all on the DS engine. At this point, I'm assuming they're all on the Game Boy
What is it? The different camera perspective in Black and White.
Yeah.
They had a early version of that in Diamond and Pearl. You had to hack it in, though. So it's the same engine, essentially.
It's kind of interesting. I like that city, but I don't know if there's any others that look like that.
I don't know. It's called Huan City in the Japanese translation that I have, so I don't know what the city's names are called.
Well, I mean, has there been anything else anybody's been saying here?
No, not really.
Not really.
Okay, so I guess we can head to the news. And, I mean, we might as well start with Pokemon since we ended the last segment with that. 1 million copies, first day, United States.
Those who are surprised say aye. Exactly. Okay.
I'm kind of surprised at over a million, but I did expect more than Diamond and Pearl.
I mentioned this last week, but I went to the launch event in Nintendo World Store, and I have honestly never seen a store like that. And I've been there for some of the, I've been there for New Super Mario Bros. Wii, I've been there for Mario Galaxy and stuff like that. And, you know, those ended up being huge multi-million sellers, and I've never seen a line like that before. So
I was going to say, but they're not in 15-year-old franchises, but they're older than that.
Yeah. and even New Super Mario Bros. Wii ended up selling something like 22 million worldwide. So, I mean, it's not like it's a small potato, but Pokemon was huge. And it's kind of weird because, I mean, Nintendo World Store does it, but Nintendo, for the most part, doesn't do, like, the whole huge events. They don't do, like, you know, midnight launches and stuff like that. So it was kind of interesting. There were some for GameStops and stuff like that, but we'll see how it does for the rest of the month. I'm just surprised that after three games on the DS, this is the one that people decide to go after, and I'm not sure why. I mean, again, like we said, it's a great game. I'm just kind of curious why after Diamond, Pearl, Platinum, Heart, Gold, Soul, Silver, that Black and White kind of become these huge mammoth success.
Yeah.
Because this is the fastest selling.
Saying that, I know I have heard of a lot of people that haven't played since like Gold and Silver, and they decided to pick Black and White up.
Yeah, but why? That's what I'm kind of. Because, I mean, if you look at it from the perspective of what Nintendo's doing, where they're trying to make Black and White kind of like the first generation all over again with, you know, Red and Blue, when you can't catch, but they don't really show that in the advertising, so.
They do a little bit. They say start on a whole new journey, over 150 new Pokemon, something like that. But, I mean, I would say that Black and White goes as far as being kind of that Pokemon 2.0 where, you know, everyone is starting from a new beginning. They've added so many features. I feel like the little half steps that Ruby, Sapphire, Diamond, and Pearl have taken all lead up to this full step that is Black and White.
Yeah, and I see that. It's just that I just don't know how. I just never seen how that comes across to other people, but apparently it's doing something if the game's selling so well. I mean, I doubt it's going to sell as well as Red and Blue, but I can see it being up there with the rest of them. So, yeah, there's that. And I guess in other news, since we're already talking about sales, we might as well. MPDs were released this week. It was actually pretty surprising. All three consoles are up this year. Xbox up 25% to 535,000, which is the biggest single month non-holiday for the Xbox console, which is surprising since this is the beginning of its sixth year.
And there hasn't been anything special come out for it either.
No, that's the thing. It's like, it's not even like, I mean, I assume it's being driven by Kinect, but even then, there hasn't been a major Kinect title
since
launch.
Yeah.
So I don't know what, I mean, it's, the software's selling decently, but it seems like the games people are buying are kind of like the stuff held over from the holidays, like Call of Duty and Kinect Sports and, you know, Dance Central, but it's not like they're selling in great numbers, but it's doing something. And I mean, Microsoft has to be happy with that. There's no way around it, because as everybody who points out, especially if you read N4G,
there's no games.
Microsoft has no games.
Yeah.
And I think it's just kind of spit in the face of common logic, just like the Wii did, that you don't necessarily need a new game every month to sell your hardware. You need games that people want and people will continue to buy.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, on that foot, we have the PlayStation 3 on the other hand, where people are always like, you know, like Sony, you know, they're for the hardcore gamers because they have like 20 great games going out every month. But when you have something like Killzone 3, which is one of Sony's, I guess would be one of their big franchises, comes out in its launch month and it sells 280,000, it kind of, it's like, what's the point of having all these great franchises if you can't move anything?
That's the thing is, they only pander to the people that already have PS3s and have already played
those
these games.
And those people will champion it, but they don't realize that And I mean, I commend Sony, and I don't want to turn this into a Sony crapping contest again.
This is another thing with the NGP, is the games they've got on it. Oh, yeah, they've got a new Killzone game. Yeah, they've got another Uncharted game, but they're only pandering to people who have already played those games.
And people who pretty much would have bought the NGP, yeah, no matter what Sony announced it to be. And that's kind of the thing with Sony, is that if they have these franchises that do well for Sony fans, but they don't kind of break the shell. And Sony does try. I'll give them credit for that. I think they've introduced more new IPs this generation than either Microsoft or Nintendo. I could be mistaken in that regard.
I don't think they are.
It's just that they don't know. They haven't been able to find one that really, you know, attaches to gamers. And I think the biggest issue with that is probably outside of Heavy Rain, every other major franchise they have is kind of a derivative of something else.
Yeah, I mean, it's very fragmented in a way where, you know, there are people who are going to love something like Motor Storm Apocalypse. There are going to be people who love Little Big Planet. It's just these franchises are so diverse, different gamers like different games. Yeah. And it's in, you know, they're appealing to hardcore gamers, but hardcore gamers have different tastes necessarily. Like, I'll buy Little Big Planet. I bought Killzone. Have no interest in Motor Storm, although I did play it in 3D and it was pretty cool. I mean, it just so fragmented everything that they can't expect all the gamers to go buy one game.
And this is this is also the issue with Move, is because I know a lot of people who bought Move just for Dance Central because that's their kind of thing. You know, they bought a 360 and they bought Kinect because of Dance Central, whereas Sony was just like, yeah, this existing game that you can play with a controller is out on Move.
Yeah, and it's kind of like you're selling it to an audience. Because, I mean, honestly, you're not going to get a second win. It's not, people are going to say, oh, Heavy Rain supports Move. I'm going to go pick that up now.
Yeah, but given the opportunity, I would play it with a controller and not Move.
Because
would require me to go and spend an extra $90 on a game that I can already play.
Yeah, that's the other thing. But, you know, everybody has their own theories now. And I this is my issue. I don't have an issue with Sony. I have an issue with Sony fans. I find that of the three they are the most obnoxious. And it's kind of like, you know, like everybody would say, you know, Move is what, it's motion controls everybody wanted. But it's the motion controls people think they wanted. People don't want, people want more one-to-one, but they don't want it to be a point where a game becomes a chore to play. Yeah. And that's kind of like, I mean, Nintendo has one-to-one controls, but even then, they don't use Wii Motion Transfer out of games because it actually makes some games more difficult when you actually have to use force and momentum and stuff like that. And it's one of those hurdles that you have to overcome with your game play design. You have to assist people in some regard because at the end of the day, if I wanted to play ping pong and make it difficult, I'd go play on a real ping pong table.
Yeah.
And almost with Move, I feel like Sony's almost treating it for now at least as kind of a supplementary device, kind of like an accessory. Like, yeah, you can play a game with a controller and you can play it with Move. It's not like that we're seeing a lot of Move exclusive games. It's just, you know, Move controls being attached to games that play fine already.
And that's the problem. That's the problem, is that it won't get an audience like that, because if the company who's making it treats it as a secondary item, everybody else is going to follow suit. Yeah. Like, you know, it's the same thing with Wii Motion Plus. Nintendo kind of treats it as a secondary. But even then, they were smart enough to bundle it with the console at some point.
I think that's why Kinect is big, because Microsoft are actually saying, this is a different thing.
Yeah, and there's no games that you can get.
And
yet.
It's clear,
I mean, there might
when you
be
see a Kinect game on the shelf next to your normal 360 game, you can see which is which, because the Kinect is in a purple box, and it has a big purple stripe on it. So at least Microsoft are saying, this is a Kinect game. Instead of saying, oh, yeah, you can play it with Move.
Yeah, and right now there are no crossover titles where you have, like, oh, this has Kinect support in it. It's either a Kinect title or a 360 title. There's no middle ground. So it's like, if I buy Kinect, I know what games I can get with it, and I can still get these games. And I assume that's why you're seeing stuff like Call of Duty and Marvel vs. Capcom doing so well on the Xbox.
Well, there are games like that. Harry Potter, there's, you know, you play the regular game with the Kinect.
Let's not talk about Harry Potter.
And then there's the Kinect mode inside.
The difference is that game isn't a very good game at all.
Yeah, no matter what you use.
I'm just saying it uses...
I get what you're saying, but...
and they have said it's possible for that middle ground where you can play with a controller and Kinect at the same time, or maybe...
The main thing is that that's not happening for the most part. And that's a good thing.
Eventually, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure eventually, but see, that's the thing with Sony and the Move is they kind of did that out of the gate instead of saying, okay, here's a bunch of Move-only titles. Now, that I should clarify that they're Move-only titles and they're good titles because there are tons of Move-only titles, but most of them suck or most of them aren't fun or most of them are kind of derivative of Wii Sports. Like Sports Champion, The Fight, The Shoot, Time Crisis, even though I think you can play that with a controller and stuff like that. But, yeah, like I said, we're not going to beat up on Sony again. We seem to do that every week.
Poor Sony. A year of the PS3 and all that, you know.
Yeah, they seem to make a lot of poor decisions this generation. Well, not poor decisions. It's like they make decisions and never want to back them to their completion. New Shadow of the Damned Troyer. Have you two seen this?
Yep, I've seen
it. It looks like a Grasshopper game. Which is, I guess, the greatest compliment you can. It looks bizarre and strange. I would love to see a brainchild between Platinum and Grasshopper, and what type of game they would make.
Yeah.
And I think this game is set to come out in June.
Yep, that's so.
Yeah, it's pretty soon. I mean, again, it won't do as well as some other things, but I think it will. You know, it will be something fun and different.
Yeah, it looks, I mean, the art style looks great. The gameplay, I feel like there's something that they're not telling us with it, because, you know, in the trailer, you kind of see it looks like a game Suda 51 or Grasshopper would create, and then kind of looks like that Resident Evil kind of over-the-shoulder view, and it looks like there's some other things with it. I saw the main character glowing at one point or something, so I feel like there's more than just, you know, going around and shooting zombies or ghosts or whatever there is.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, the trailer does, but it looks nice, and it does have gameplay, which is always my greatest thing when it comes to video game trailers.
Same here.
Like, see gameplay. We also had news this week, which is news, but I found it kind of weird how big news it made. But the fact that Uncharted 3 villain will be a female.
I don't understand why there's such a big deal about this.
Me either.
Actually, I think no. Do you know what I think? The thing is it's interesting because it means that there probably won't be a big boss fight like there was at the end of Uncharted 2 with Lazarevich.
Well, I think it's going to end up being something where there's going to be a big boss battle, but it's not going to be with her.
Yeah, like, either that or it'll be some really hard puzzles.
Yeah, I think she's going to end up turning good, and it looks like she has some type of romantic relationship with Sully in the past, and I think that's going to kind of play into the conclusion.
I like how the characters are British, and they're not Americans doing British people. They actually sound like they're British people. That's one because you get that a lot with video games is, you know, Americans try and get a British person, and instead of...
I've heard that about Heavy Rain.
Yeah, well, Heavy Rain was all French people trying to do Americans. So
some of that was just failure, but it was kind of funny at the same time.
I mean, I guess what is your favorite game as far as voice acting is concerned?
It's probably Red Dead Redemption.
Because, I mean, voice acting in video games, people make a huge deal out of them. And I'm not saying it's awful, but as far as I know, it's never been anything really spectacular to me.
Yeah.
Like, there's games with good voice acting, but I've never really, you know, sat there awed at their amazement.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. It's just something that, it depends, because voice acting can be really good, and it can be really bad, but really good at the same time.
Yeah, like I think we need more humor in video games. I think, you know, like with this whole everybody wants to be taken as a legit art form, you kind of lose the fun aspect of games sometimes where people don't. Like, there's no problem in having bad voice acting if it's intentionally bad. Like, you can make like a Japanese game and have like fake American dubs where it's not synced or anything.
Yeah,
and that would be fun.
That's what you know. I recommended you to watch the Machine Girl. That was one part that made it. Is the dubbing?
Yeah, Machine Girl was awesome. The Machine Girl, I should say, if you want to check that movie out on Netflix, is a fun time. But yeah, you know, you get that type of dubbing, and that's what I enjoyed about Kung Fu Panda. Kung Fu Pao.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you can get that. And, you know, those type of movies, they have their place. There should be games like that. Not everything needs to have Hollywood actors attached to it, because sometimes you kind of get these wooden performances because people are just there for a paycheck.
Absolutely.
It reminds me of the voice acting in Armored 2. I never played it, but I watched the video on YouTube, and most of the voice acting is just text-to-speech, and I wish I was joking. And it's not even like, sometimes it'll be like, there is an enemy over there. It's so bad.
Okay. but yeah, what else has there been this week? You were mentioning the EA, who is it, EA sneak in?
DRM into Dragon Age 2.
Yeah, explain that.
So, a lot of people were upset with how Dragon Age 2 was, the game was anyway. And then we discovered that there's this DRM system called Securom that nobody likes, because it just punishes the consumer, basically. And EA, they snuck it into Dragon Age 2, and the big deal out of this is when you do something like that, you have to tell the consumer, and nowhere did EA say, this is in the game. And then, as if it couldn't get any worse, someone posted something negative about the game on BioWare's forums, and then one of the moderators of the forums said, yeah, we have the right to ban you and stop you from playing the game. And then I was just like, no way.
That's just awful customer support.
And then EA were like, oh, sorry, that was a mistake. And I'm just like, oh, come on, EA. Make up your minds.
Yeah.
That's
a terrible, terrible decision.
Honestly.
But, yeah, I don't get how, you know, like some of these decisions are made and stuff like that. Because I don't get how people don't realize that the internet is such a fast-moving thing. Like, I'm sure you all bear witness to the fact that the creator of Pokemon died this weekend on Twitter.
Yeah, and then even Nintendo of America said that he didn't, and people kept saying that he did.
Yeah, that's what I meant. It's like, as long as one person thought something and other people start believing it, it's harder to disprove something once it gets going than it is to say, like, this isn't true. No, I heard this, but it isn't true. Here's fact. No, it isn't true. And that's kind of the issue. It's like, once that gets out there, it's more damage for you because you have to keep on, like, no, that's not true. But, you know, I heard, no, that's not true. And you have to say it each and every time, because once one thing gets out, people are going to start believing that.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, I started believing at one point. It was just like, I just couldn't believe it happened. I'm like, this is definitely false. And then Nintendo assured everyone, it's okay, nobody died.
But even when Nintendo assured people, it was still going on that people were like, oh my gosh, RIP.
I'm honestly glad that I took it with a pinch of salt when I first heard it, because, I mean, although it is a disaster, people do make this stuff up just for kicks.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad, because if any of you actually checked it out, but the rumor was started by some chick on Twitter, and as far as I can tell, she's like an attention whore, and she would literally respond like, oh, I'm getting so many haters, and this was going on for like 12 hours, and nobody, you know, put one and one together, the fact that she's making it up. This is, you know, people want their 15 minutes, and this is how they get it sometimes.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, I find it disrespectful in any regard to use any type of major incident to your advantage, you know, politically, Twitter-wise, you know, just, you know, some people are making it out to be an act of God and stuff like that. And I find it stupid when people are suffering that you want to push your agenda at that point.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. And, yeah, there's no real good way to transition from that. So, I mean, you know, hearts out to everybody in Japan. But Microsoft announced this week that they're doing an Xbox Live Arcade retail bundle, which has Limbo, Explosion Man, and Trials HD for $30. Thoughts on that?
It's not a horrible deal. I think it's great for people who may have heard of these games, but for whatever reason don't have Xbox Live. I think, you know, these games cost $10 to $15 each. It's definitely a discount buying it on disc than it is on download.
The two things I would have, two things is, One is that it's probably easier for it to come down in price, because retail packages seem to come down in price much faster and kind of stay that way. The other thing, though, is like, are they, because it's always been kind of an unwritten rule that arcade games have 200 achievement points and then retail games have 1,000. So is this going to balance that out, or is it just going to be three games with 200 achievement points?
I think it's going to be three games with 200 achievement points.
Yeah, easily. They wouldn't change it. It's just going to be the same stuff.
I kind of like that they've, instead of just cherry picking like three random ones that sold well, they put platformers in there. Because, well, Trials HD is pretty much a platformer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Sony followed suit, didn't they? And they were like, oh yeah, we're going to put PSN titles out to retail.
Well, Sony's been kind of rebunding their games anyhow, yeah. So it's not surprising. Again, I don't want to say, because I'm actually a fan of, like, you know, collections and stuff like that. I just kind of find it funny that Sony's really just kind of hammering with those, because you've had the God of War, you had the Side Collection, you've had the Tomb Raider, the Splinter Cell, the Prince of Persia, the Team Ico one, which apparently, I didn't put this here because I don't really handle rumors, but apparently that's been pushed back to 2012, or fall of this year, one of those two. And stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it's a novel idea. It's kind of odd that Microsoft nor Sony kind of done it this entire generation. Especially if I was Microsoft. I mean, they have the Summer of Arcade stuff that they do every summer. So if I was them, you know, you bundle that up and you kind of sell it as a new thing in like February, and you have yourself like a big retail package that you can sell for like $40.
Yeah.
When there aren't many major games coming out.
I think that the biggest thing that will drive sales of these is the fact that the price will go down.
Yes.
So quick.
Because even when you have sales on the iPhone or PSN, you don't really notice it unless you're an active person on the internet or on these services, and you actively seek them out.
Yeah.
Okay, and huge, huge, huge for me. We finally got a Batman Arkham City release date, October 18th. So, you know, my most anticipated title of the year. I can't wait for that. And I think it's the 21st for you Brits.
It's October, isn't it?
Yeah.
More games releasing in the fall.
I was actually kind of surprised at that. I realized that the original did so well. But part of it was because it released in August, and there's no competition then. And
yeah.
I thought they would have kept it around then, because, I mean, as it stands right now, like, October and November are jam-packed with releases, especially
November. Well, at the minute, and then we're just going to see them go, oh, no, Q1 2011, 2012 even, Q2 2012, that'll happen. Like it has for the past 3 years.
Even September's pretty packed this year with Gears of War 3 and Rage.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there's a ton of games. We shall see how many of them do the shuffle though. I'm sure as we get closer after E3, we'll make our bets as to which one get moved into Q1 next year.
Yeah.
I think Jason probably called it last year with what game did he
Crisis?
Say? Portal 2.
Oh, all right.
And Portal 2 and the Conduit.
Yeah, but no, that's cheating. You can't call that on a Valve game, because Valve always delays their games.
He also called it on the Conduit, too. So.
Nah. That's a good call.
That made sense, because GoldenEye would have probably taken, you know, GoldenEye and Call of Duty on the Wii would have taken all his press, besides the HD things. And I guess then the 3DS demo pods have gone active in 4 major cities in the United States. New York, Chicago, LA, and somewhere else that I probably don't care about.
Oh, yes. San Francisco's the other one.
Okay. But yeah, you know, demo pods, it's down in Grand Central. I want to go check it out. I'll probably go check it out this week, but yeah, it went up Friday. Stuff like that. I've heard it's pretty good. People are coming away interested in the device. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of weird that Nintendo kind of picked... I mean, it's not weird, but they picked 4 major markets where I think they didn't have to sell people on. Like, you'd have to probably get into those smaller areas. But at the same hand, putting it in these areas, you kind of hit the bigger population. Especially with Grand Central, you kind of get that crowd where, you know, like people who are commuting and stuff, and maybe they, you know, either have to wait for their trains or, you know, they missed it or something, so they have time to burn. So it gives them something to do. So you might get those people who don't traditionally play video games to check it out.
Penn Station would have been a better location, I think, because you get a lot more variety of people. Not only that, but
I don't know.
Go through there.
I don't know where you put it, where you would put it in Penn Station.
Yeah, exactly. Grand Central is more of a kind of like a shopping area. But I want to go. I can go. I live fairly close to New York City, but I'm not going to go. But simply because there are two reasons for this. Number one, it's just I want to be surprised by what I see on launch day. And if I go to the demo pod, I'm going to know exactly what to expect. I'm going to have tried out the AR cards, the Mii Maker, a bunch of the launch games, including Pilot Wings. And just like, you know, I'll come walking away knowing exactly what to expect. So on the 27th, when I take my 3DS out of the box, I'll be like, okay, I've kind of explored just about everything beforehand. What do I do now? So I want to leave a lot of surprises. And the second thing is that check your local Best Buys. They are getting demo kiosks this week. I went to mine today thinking that it might have had it, or even I just wanted to go because I haven't driven in a while. And mine is actually getting one in a couple of days, so I don't have to travel all the way to New York City to try it out. And what I want to do, I did this with Kinect as well because I had a Kinect in my Macy's back in the summer. I just want to try it out for 5 minutes, just see how it works, if it works, and then just walk away kind of with this idea of knowing it works, get excited, it's coming. And that's exactly what I'm going to do with the 3DS.
Yeah. I want to check it out. I mean, granted, I'm not going to buy it anytime soon, but I do want to kind of just get a hands-on impression of it and kind of understand what to expect from the device when it drops this year and when my games start rolling in, like new Super Mario 3DS and Paper Mario.
Not going for Ocarina of Time 3D?
I it's really difficult for me to support remakes, and it's even more when I don't particularly care for the game, which I know is hearsay for Zelda fans, but I've tried Ocarina of Time like 3 or 4 different times. I've tried it on the N64. I've tried it on the GameCube, and I just can't get into it. Which is odd, because I can get into Wind Waker and I can get into Twilight Princess, but Ocarina of Time and me are just not the best of friends.
Yeah, I've kind of played it several times as well, but I've never actually finished the game completely, so I feel like having on the 3DS where it's in 3D, the graphics are enhanced, like the difference between the graphics is actually incredibly noticeable and it looks great. It's including Master Quest as well, which I do have, but I never got the chance to play, so playing it on the 3DS I feel like will be better, especially because I have a summer job with a lot of, probably have a summer job with a lot of downtime, so it'll be good to play.
Okay, and finally, I guess the biggest game of the year, one of the hotly anticipated games of all time, We Dare, is now not only not coming out in the United States, but it's also not coming out in the United Kingdom. So the game pretty much is coming out in, like, Australia.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if it was refused classification there for whatever reason.
You know, so basically, so it's not coming out anywhere.
It'll come out in Central Europe, where nobody really cares about it.
I mean, it's kind of a shame, because I honestly do think there's a place in the industry for that type of game, and I think this reaction is kind of showing that even though video games kind of want to be taken seriously, they still have a lot of growing up to do, because they aren't as comfortable with certain topics as, like, movies and TV are. And yes, I realize that movies and TV are still kind of shaky for...
even then you still have overtly sexual movies.
When you tackle sex in video games, it's usually in such an immature manner. And not saying that We Dare isn't immature, but it kind of, you know, people do this type of stuff.
Yeah.
There's no shame in hiding that. And people kind of see it as like, oh, I don't want my video games to encourage people to have sex. There's nothing that encourages people to have sex other than having sex. You don't need a motivation to do that.
With We Dare, it's not like they have a penis on the screen or anything. It's just overtly, you know, kind of suggesting you do get in sexual positions and whatnot.
And there's tons of different ways to do that. You don't need a video game to do that.
Exactly.
I just thought it was, you know, it's kind of, you know, like, it's kind of like those, you know, like adult board games. But, not, you know, like, you know, strip, it's no different than like something like strip poker, which is the point is to get somebody naked.
And the problem with this is it's basically furthering the sort of view that if you put so much controversy, if you make a game controversial like this, then the publishers will just give in. I mean, EA, yeah. It happened with Medal of Honor, and EA were like, no, we're not changing it. No, we're not changing the game. No, we're not changing the game. And they ended up changing the game. You know?
Yeah. And again, it's kind of, again, it's that video games on one hand want to be taken seriously. On the other hand, it's kind of like they don't know how to back themselves up. And it's a point that people make. It's like, you know, people are like, video games are art, and there's an issue with video games. It's just video games. So you can't have both those mentalities kind of working because they work against each other. You either want to push yourself further and, you know, cement this as a legitimate industry, or you just think of it as an entertainment form. That there's no problem with either mentalities if one is consistent.
Yeah.
Yep.
To me, it's always kind of been that video games are entertainment, and I think we did was kind of pushing that where it's kind of like, and this is the kind of game we've been pushing towards this generation where you're having just as much fun with what you're playing as what you're doing in real life. And it's kind of that mentality that, you know, it's kind of like Kinect and Wii Sports and stuff like that. It's that, you know, what you do in real life can enhance the gameplay experience. And I think the problem people had, and I'm not sure what happened in the UK, was the rating system where people thought it didn't deserve a 12.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But based on the content of the game, there's no issue with it getting a 12. I think what you do with a game shouldn't really matter if the game itself doesn't do that. I guess that's a weird way to say it, but it's like,
I think unless it's actually explicitly said, you know, like, you know, get one person with a remote to slap you on the ass with it or whatever. I mean, that's a bit of a weird example, but unless it doesn't invert, like, actually explicitly say to do.
Yeah, or show the animation to do that.
Yeah.
I don't, it's kind
fine,
of, yeah. It's like, there's a ton of games I used to drink to. Should those games get 17 ratings or even 21?
I know because people have a drinking game based around Call of Duty, so.
Yeah, should that get a 21 rating because I can't drink until I'm 21? It's what I'm doing because of the game. Mario Party has always encouraged that type of behavior because it moves at such a pace. But yeah, I made my case on We Dare. I actually thought it was a novel game, but really, at the end of the day, it's not going to get much more than that publicity trailer a couple of weeks ago. That was for the hype of its popularity.
For once, we just need a publisher to say, no, we're going to do this no matter what you think.
Yeah, but it seems like they're just getting way too many pressure, too much pressure from everywhere.
Yeah, nobody wants it.
Because that's what movies do. Movies just say, we'll do it.
That's not always the case. There are movies, like I'm sure you've heard about like, The King's Speech, which is getting re-edited down so that they can get a PG-13 rating.
Really?
But that's I don't think they're getting a PG-13 rating because they're being told to. They want a PG-13 rating because, honestly, that's, you want more people, they wanted it to be more accessible.
Well, that's fine, but instead of just saying, oh, we'll just remove the content that's offensive, or we're just not going to sell it, that's just giving in.
Yeah, they
especially especially in something like Medal of Honor, where it was just a word, a name for a team in the multiplayer mode, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, is there any other big gaming news this week that we missed?
The cloud saving for PSN.
Oh, yes, the PSN cloud saving. That was huge news because I'm still going back and forth on this. It sounds like a great feature. I'm not really a huge fan of the fact that it's PlayStation Plus exclusive, but
one thing I don't really like, which I found out, is there will be some games. So it's nice to have. If I have PlayStation Plus, it would be nice to have it there, so I put my important saves on it, and so I have a copy of my hard drive, and I have it in the cloud, right? Which is exactly the way that Steam works. This is how Steam does it. But there apparently going to make games in the future that will just skip the hard drive entirely and just upload it to the cloud. And I don't want that to happen, because what happens if I don't get access to it? Say if my my Wi-Fi goes down or PSN is down.
That was actually something that I could be mistaken, and I haven't read up on this much, but somebody was saying that you can only save once a day, or is it you can only access your save once a day?
You can only download.
If you have a copy protected save, which happens in some games, you can upload it to the cloud, but you can only access it a day later.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You can download as much as you want to, upload as much as you want to the cloud, but you can only download, I think, 24 hours after it's kind of settled in.
Oh,
if I have a copy protected save for Red Dead Redemption on my PS3 and I upload it to cloud, I then go over your house, say
you
20 minutes later,
again.
I can't get it until the day after I've uploaded it.
Okay, because the way somebody worded it to me, it sounded like you did it 24 hours, you couldn't do it again for 24 hours after that.
Oh no, you can just upload as much as you want. You only get 150 megabytes of space, though.
That was the other thing. But I mean, 150 megabytes of all you save.
It depends, because what if one game has a 20 meg save? Which could happen.
But how many games have that?
I don't know, but it happens. I prefer it if they did it the way that Steam does it, which is you get 100 megabytes per game.
I mean, we shall see. It depends on how they eventually work it out. Because I think 150 megabytes is well for a save.
Let's put it this way: if there are any games like Half-Life 2 on the PS3, then it's gonna be fucked. Because I have four saves in Half-Life 2 on my PC, and it's using 50 megs.
So, yeah, and it's another reason to get PlayStation Plus, which has become a service.
It's nice that they're actually giving people reasons to use it instead of taking away from the standard PlayStation which is what Microsoft does.
It's a premium service, I like that, where, you get the full service on PSN, but PlayStation Plus is added on to that. It's more, but it doesn't take away from the original.
Hi, I'm Microsoft. I'm going to charge you to use things you can use for free other.
Yes, I didn't even realize that till this week when we were doing the daily debate, and somebody pointed it out to me that you literally have to pay twice for Netflix on Xbox.
Yeah.
And there's really no reason for that anymore, because you can do it for free on the Wii, you can do it for free on the PS,
you can do it on your phone.
Your phone, your 3DS, your computer. There's no reason that I need an Xbox Live Gold.
But like I said, people pay for it because you pretty much have to if you want to use your Xbox.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Which is sad, but yeah, it's the same reason I pay for it.
I pay for it. All they needed to do is to say online is free and that's it, and then I would never pay for it ever again.
If online and like group, like, if they had party, if you had to pay for party chat, I would do that too. But I wouldn't pay much, but yeah. Because it's been such a blessing in disguise where I don't have to
I use it 9 out of every 10 times I use my 360, so.
Okay. So if there's nothing else, I think that will do it for this episode. So for Adam, who you can check out on Gamers Cast podcast, and you also co-host another podcast from time to time, correct?
Yep, I co-host. I think I'm supposed to be on the episode tonight, but I haven't heard much coming back. NGA podcast on Digital Gaming Underground, dgu.com. It's a great podcast. Go check it out.
I need to look these podcasts up.
Okay. And Daniel, who you can usually find here.
Or moaning on Twitter.
Yeah, complaining on Twitter. And I can't really say, because most of the time nowadays I seem to be angry at some stupid stuff.
You're turning into me.
It's because I read N4G too much.
But what's my excuse? I don't even read N4G. I don't touch N4G with a barge pole on it.
Oh, I was about to say you should read N4G.
No, why would I?
N4G. just too much.
Why would I read news for PlayStation gamers?
That's pretty much what it is, and it's so sad that they don't realize that.
I don't think N4G care. They get more money.
M4G don't, but like, it's always like the fans are like, oh, this isn't a Sony website. Yeah. When, it, you know, just randomly, let's check one of the five hot stories this week. New Uncharted 3 gameplay video features Nolan North. NPD data for PS3 units sold in February. Evidence unveiled for GTA 5 Rockstar Iron.
I may not like Cliff Bleszinski, but even he noticed it because he posted a picture of a guy dressed as Kratos playing Gears 3, and he put, hey, M4G, Kratos is playing Gears, and then he put a hashtag which was cheating on PS3.
Killzone 3 patch 1.04 causing major issues. Goodbye, Demon Soul. So, four of the five topics are PS3 related. One of them has to do with a patch.
Yeah.
I hate that. There was a day this week, I think it was, I want to say Wednesday, where three of the five stories dealt with the PlayStation 3.60 patch. And I'm like, I don't get why people are
cool
patches so much.
You know, it's news because it has cloud saving, but not that newsworthy.
But the thing is, none of them were cloud saving related.
Really?
One was that it's up, one was that it's, you know, it's preventing piracy, and the other one is like, what's new in the 3.6 update? And I'm just like, wow. And the fact that they all were the three top stories, it just drives me insane. Like, what is so special about, like, the thing that drives me nuts is I've seen the announcement of the 3DS. I've seen the announcement of tons of great games that don't break the top five, but a firmware update does.
Oh, I proved with my submission that it's just full of play because it was an article about the Xbox 360 editor for IGN saying that his preferred platform was a PS3, and it shot right to the top.
Yeah, we actually did that, and I think he ended up being the top story within
top
like
story.
18 hours.
Yeah, it was silly.
Which is so sad. So, yeah, if you ever want to get hits on your website, make a pro-Sony article or an anti-Sony article.
Okay, hottest right now. New Uncharted 3 gameplay video features Nolan North.
So, yeah, just make like an anti- or pro-Sony article and post it on the website, and just kind of leave it alone for a day, and your hits will skyrocket. So yeah, this has been Dual Wielding episode 24, How to Piss Off Sony Fans at N4G. thank you and have a good day.
Who attacks with Tuscan teeth? Kafagrigus is go-go-ghosty. Darmanitan is so-so-toasty. Basculin comes in red and blue. Blitzel is electric and cute. Audino can hear everything. Deerling goes with a seasonal thing. Drillbur has a couple digger paws. Fracture has a powerful jaw. Moona gets inside your dreams. Lipert is little, dark and mean. Servine lives out in the weeds. Semirot's sword is strong indeed. Zoroark is crafty and dark. Gigalith is dense like rock. I can't stop catching them all. 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 Lillipup is little and brown. Excadrill digs underground. Sage loves the green, green grass. Musharna loves the map. Snivy is so green and bright. Minccino is fuzzy and white. Watchhog watches out for stuff. Woobat is a psychic puff. Swanna is pure white and flies. Sawsbuck changes over time. Ignite burns so strong and bright. Reshiram is enormous and white. Zekrom is so black and huge. Victini wins it all for you. Panpour likes to splash and spray. Braviary is not afraid. Zorua is a little bit tricky. Reuniqueless is good at thinking. Embor burns hot as the sun. Oshawa can slice and cut. Patrat is looking out for you. Duwat is watery blue. Hidove, such a tiny bird. Pansir burns and burns and burns. Catching them all, I can't stop catching them all. 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 I can't stop catching.
watching them all. Clink is a pair of metal gears. Yamask is a ghost to fear. Sandile loves the desert sun. Galvantula, electric bug. Purloin, sneaky and devious. Herdier, loyal friend to us. Tepig is a hot little spark. Gothitelle is black and dark. Haxorus is green and bright. Sewaddle can stitch it up tight. I can't stop catching them all. 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 I can't stop catching them all.